Hi, I'm Quentin D'Souza, and you're listening to Getting Started with Education REI. Create wealth, freedom, and security through real estate investing. Make sure to check out educationrei.ca. In this episode, this longtime member takes us through his journey in real estate investing, some of the strategies that he's used to build a portfolio of properties, and how he's flipped properties in the last year. Have a listen. Thanks for joining me today. I wanted to, first of all, you know, thanks. We were just talking before. You've been a member for, I don't know, almost 8 years, I would think, and saw the evolution from small, like, you know, room. We started in a dental office. We moved into like a meeting room that held about 100 people. It got really hot. Then we moved to a bigger room, and then and continued to grow. And I know that you've done some interesting strategies just around real estate. I know you've transitioned from your previous job, and now you're doing flips. Maybe you could share a little bit of like your background in real estate and how you kind of came about to create a portfolio.
Sure. Well, I used to work for Bell. I had a relatively senior job at Bell. And my wife also had a pretty senior role. She worked for Franklin Templeton Mutual Fund. So we both were, you know, earning good money. And about 10 years ago, I decided to start investing in properties and in rental properties. Largely because we were coming out of the 2008 recession, and I didn't trust the stock market very much. And, if I was going to invest a lot of money, then I needed to feel more secure. And I felt real estate was kind of that mechanism. So I've exclusively bought condo townhouses. So I bought one condo townhouse for $95,000. I remember the very first one I bought, $95,000. And it didn't seem that scary because it wasn't a huge number. And I made really good money on it. And then I bought another one and I made really good money. I just kept doing that. I bought six. Over the course of 4 years, I have 17 properties now. So all in the course of 4 years. They've done really well. Actually, last year, I track this pretty closely. I track different properties in different areas of the city. Condo townhouses in Oshawa last year went up by 40% in value. I think there's hardly any categories of real estate that have gone up more than that. And actually, I track it back to when I first started buying properties in 2008. It's gone up 4 or 5 times since then.
That original townhouse, what do you think it's worth today?
It's so hard to understand what it's worth because they're going up so quickly. But it's somewhere 450 or 500 probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And I remember that you came to a meeting one time, and I got to share the story because you mentioned it before. Yeah. Like there was a big life change that happened, and it had happened just the morning of one of our meetings.
Yeah. So I was working for Bell, and I don't know if people know Bell, but they, a lot of big companies have rounds of layoffs every 6 months, every 1 year, it just keeps going in cycles. So I knew this was inevitable for me at some point, but that morning it had happened. And so I got laid off from my job. My wife had retired from her job about 3 years ago. So now we're sitting there with no income or no job income. But, I had 17 properties. So it happened that morning at Quentin's meeting. So Quentin, pointed me out in front of everyone and he put me on the spot and said, what are you going to do now, Alan? And I basically, at that point, I was pretty sure I wasn't going to go back to work, and I haven't gone back to work. And right then and there, I basically retired. I was 52 years old. And so that, you know, I'm happy I did it. It's been the greatest thing I've ever done. And I'm doing better than ever. So it was a good decision.
Yeah. And you were talking also about the, you had mentioned about the properties that you had been working on over the last year, which I think, so you were able to create that. Now, I just want people to understand that you were able to create a base of income that came from your rental property portfolio. And I know that that's probably not your only source of income. Like maybe, are you able to highlight, like, because you have a breadth of different income sources.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about what happened in the last year. So.
Sure. So you want to kind of have a sense of where my income sources are?
If that's okay.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's no problem. So
you don't have to be specific.
I've done things differently than a lot of other people in Durham REI. I manage all the properties myself. I do my own renovations. If a tenant has a problem with a toilet, I'll fix it. I don't mind doing stuff like that. And, you know, in fact, I like it because it gives me a sense, it gives me a chance to interact with my tenants, and it makes them feel like I'm responsive, and I am responsive. I'm a great landlord. The things that I've done different, I'll do all that work myself. I really haven't remortgaged my properties and pulled money out of my properties over the course of close to 10 years. I have a little tiny bit, but for the most part, I haven't. So, you know, my loan to value ratio is really low. It's like around 20%. And so because I have never remortgaged or pulled money out for the most part, and the properties have gone up substantially over that course of time. And so having that kind of loan to value ratio, the income that I generate from the properties is really good. I do really well on a monthly basis just from the income from the properties.
That's awesome.
And yeah, I also have I have a lot of investments in the stock market and equities and other types of investments outside of real estate. So I don't so much
look at that as income.
I don't really look at that as income. I just look at that as investments for the future at some point. But you know, sometimes I do pull money out of that. In fact, one thing I am doing is we're going to talk a bit about this today, but outside of what we're going to talk about, I still do have some RSPs, and I do pull money out of my RSP, even though I'm not, I don't know if I'm retired. I don't know what to call myself if I'm retired or not. I don't know. People ask me if I'm retired, and I don't know the answer to that. But anyway, I pull money out of my RSPs arguably early because I don't think that I don't think there's going to be a better time to do it because, you know, taxes are going to be higher when I want to pull them out when I'm 70 or 80. So I just do it now when my taxes are going to be lower than they will be in the future. That's another source of income.
Interesting. So it sounds like the majority of your day-to-day income comes from your real estate portfolio.
I don't spend a lot of money, to tell you the truth. I don't. So yeah, it comes, I have way more than enough from my day to day, just from the income properties I have. And I'm not a big spender. I like to go on vacation, but other than that, I don't really spend a lot of money.
And that's okay. That's fine.
Yeah. That's the way it is.
Yeah, and I agree. I'm very similar, you know, and I don't really have a flashy lifestyle or anything like that. So, but one of the things that you have done over the last year that has been a little different is that you've been doing some property flips. And I think, you know, one of the things I just want to reiterate again is you created a portfolio of properties that helps to give you some stability of your you have a low loan to value, and now you've added some active income to that right. portfolio. And I'm assuming you like, even with 17 properties being single family homes, you probably don't spend a lot of time every week on those properties. Like what, like how many hours would you say per week you
Honestly, it's hardly anything. I mean, there'll be weeks at a time that go by I don't spend really any time on it at all. And occasionally there was a person who moved out and in December, and they were kind of gross, and I had to spend 2 weeks fixing it up and repainting things and tearing out a few carpets and stuff like that. And it took me 2 weeks. That hardly ever happens, but it did happen in December. That would be really, truly exceptional that I have to spend 2 weeks on a particular property. Other than that, I'd probably spend 5 hours a week, maybe. That's probably generous.
Okay. And now, so you have this time, you obviously are good with your hands and you like to get involved. Yeah. So it sounds like you got into some property flips. Maybe you can describe what that's been like over the last year.
Well, I did four flips over the last year, starting almost, well, I did one just before the pandemic. It was a really large house in Oshawa, like a 3,500 square foot house, in just disgusting condition. And I did all the work myself, and it was way too much. It took a lot out of me. I'll never do that again. It was a lesson learned. I made money on it. I made relatively good money on it. Not as good as the flips I'm going to tell you about in a minute, but it was grueling. So it was a lesson for me that the kind of flips I want to do in the future are kind of easy cosmetic flips on relatively small houses or condos.
And what was the first, like, what did you generate off of the first flip?
Probably, well, I bought it for $530 and I sold it for $720. I probably made about $90,000.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And that's a lot of sweat equity.
That was a lot of work.
Like, how many hours would you say ballpark that you spent on that project?
Yeah, this is something you shouldn't do. So I spent 7 months on it, in almost full time. And I'm a kind of guy who it was a mistake. Okay, this was a mistake. The buying that large a property in such horrible condition, and doing it all myself. But I'm the kind of guy who gets into something and there's no way I'm not going to win. It's going to happen. I'm just going to make it happen. I'm just going to do whatever it takes to make this successful. So that's what I did.
Okay.
And I had to work really hard to make it successful. But it was a very good lesson. And the lesson is, smaller houses, easier, more cosmetic renovations.
Okay. So then what was the next property?
So the next one was, it was the easiest one ever. So I bought a condo downtown Toronto in Fort York area. I don't know if you know where that is, just south of Liberty Village. I bought it for $490, I think it was. And I spent, it was needed painting. It needed to be cleaned, but really there was not much more to it than that. I spent, I think, $2,000 on it. I got the whole family involved, my wife and my two kids. No one was doing anything during the pandemic. So we all spent a week going downtown into this condo for about 7 days. And it took, that's exactly what it took, 7 days. And then, and I was kind of scared because it was the very beginning of the pandemic. I didn't know what was going to happen. And luckily I got out of it pretty quickly because condos downtown haven't done well.
No,
but it was okay. It was just before they started going down. And I was a little scared, but we cleaned it up really nicely, and we stage it. I think this is important. If you're going to flip, stage it just to the nines. Make it so unbelievably nice in terms of staging, and that's what we did. And a week later, I put it in the market. Had multiple offers. I can't remember, maybe 8 or 9 offers, and we sold it for $100,000 more than we bought it for.
So $590,
and I made on it, after all expenses and so on and real estate fees, I probably made about, and after taxes, about $50,000 in a week. That was good.
But that's similar to the first project, right?
That was exactly the opposite.
No, but at least the return was the same.
It was.
So what about your third and fourth project? What were they?
Then I got a little bit braver, and I bought a couple of properties where they were tenanted, and I had to evict the tenant. And it took, well, one in particular, the one I just sold actually last week. I bought it in last January, and I was actually in, well, it doesn't matter where I was. I bought it last January for, I bought it for $154,000 is in Guelph. Right. It was in terrible, terrible condition. There was a guy in there that was gross and he smoked constantly. Well, me and my son went to see the property and he wasn't paying rent. So me, and I bought it off a wholesaler, okay? Me and my son went to see the property in Guelph, which is pretty far from me. I live in Scarborough. And we couldn't get in the property and the police were there. And I'm going, what the heck's going on? And so the police are there and the wholesaler is kind of embarrassed, not embarrassed, but, you know, trying to make things like, you know,
cozy.
Yeah, and not trying to scare me too much. Okay. And so, she said, okay, I think we can go and see it. So the police are in front of the building. And so we go up the elevator, it's a condo apartment. We go up the elevator and there's a police woman standing outside the door, wouldn't let me in. And the tenant had some, he was in his 50s, but he had some young guys staying with him and they're all drug addicts. So the police had raided this apartment that morning, arrested the young guy that was living with the tenant, and I couldn't see it. So I had to decide if I wanted to buy it. I had to buy it sight unseen, basically, which is scary, but it wasn't that big a number. I bought it and spent, 8 months trying to get rid of this guy, and he just wasn't going to go. I had to actually go to divisional court. He appealed it and appealed it and appealed it. I had to go to divisional court. It cost me about $16,000 to evict him. And luckily there was a window in October where evictions were allowed, and I managed to evict him in October. And then me and my son renovated it. It took us 6 weeks, January to mid-February. It made it gorgeous. It's really nice. And we sold it for $375,000.
Wow.
$150,000 in a year.
Wow. So
what was great. It took me 6 weeks. And I mean, besides all the hassle and getting this guy evicted and stuff, it took me 6 weeks. It wasn't that hard.
Yeah, no, that's good. And if you're both doing it, then your renovation costs, and it's a condo, so there's not like that much to do. So
I got it everything. It cost me $10,000. I put a new kitchen in, new bathroom, new floors, painted everything. I did it, I can do all these things myself, but me and my son did it. And it's kind of fun working with your son. I was telling you earlier, I liked, and he liked it as well. And he didn't have a lot going on because of COVID, so it was kind of a good experience.
Oh, so what do you think you spent in renovation costs?
I spent $10,000. I know exactly what I spent. $10,000. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was pretty good money then.
Made great money on it.
And then what about your last one?
So there's been I did one in Oakville. It was a condo townhouse. Again, I bought it off a wholesaler. Took us about 4 weeks to do. There wasn't a lot of, it wasn't big renovations, just clean up stuff. I had to put a deck in the backyard, but that wasn't difficult. It took about 6 weeks probably. And I made probably $100,000 on it after all was said and done.
Wow. So like what I find funny is that, and you're like me too. Like we don't really spend a lot, but we can actually earn quite a bit.
Yeah. And, well, I haven't told you about the one I made the most money on. I bought another. It was a standalone, like single family house in Acton, and I bought it. I had to let part of the wholesale deal was I had to let the woman live there for 8 months. Whatever, I bought it for, I think around $400,000. I had to let her live there for 8 months. March of this year came along and she's supposed to move out. And of course she's not moving out because, you know, she's not answering calls. She's just being difficult. She's kind of friendly, but all of a sudden she has COVID apparently. And I can't get in the house and I can't talk to her and she can't leave because she thinks she has COVID. Of course she didn't have COVID, but, you know, I had to sweet talk her out. And in the end, the way I had to get her out was she found a rental property that she was going to move into, but she couldn't afford it. And she had terrible credit, terrible, terrible credit. So the landlord was insisting she pay 8 months rent up front. So I had to give her 8 months rent to get her out. And so I did. And she's supposed to pay me back. I've got three of those 8 months back so far, but we'll see if I ever get the rest of it. But I got her out. And we spent 2 months working on that property, and I sold it for, I think, $720, and I bought it for $400.
You bought it for
$400. I sold it for $720.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
it's been unbelievable. Properties have just gone, like, as you well know, through the roof. And if you bought, you know, the right property and it was in the right place and it wasn't too big, and people could afford it, the properties have just gone up so much. It's kind of scary how much they've gone up. I don't know if this is sustainable, but you know, it's been a good year.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the other thing too is that you have a skill and you're using the skill, and like, it's just like me, right? What else am I going to do? I'm not going to sit around and do nothing. I'm going to continue to reposition buildings, buy properties. Now, I don't like the active part that
you're doing,
but everybody's different. Like, that's totally okay, right? And that's what makes us a great group, right? There's lots of people that do different things and we're all sharing, and, you know, every person's approach is different. It doesn't mean that it's right or wrong. It's just that's the way you want to do it, right? Sure. We have people who are wholesalers. We have people that are realtors in the same room.
Yeah.
They have different approaches to how they do things, right? And I think that's the key. Now, one of the things that you talked about and you mentioned to me was the the TFSA maximizer.
Yeah.
So what is that?
Okay. So about... it was before I left my job at Bell. So it was over 5 years ago, maybe closer to 6 years ago now. I have in my mid 50s, and I have built up some money in RSPs, and because that's the thing you're supposed to do, right? You know, everyone tells you from the moment you get out of university, you better start investing in RSPs. So I did that every year. I maxed them out every year. And it began to be, and at the same time I started to invest in real estate and it was going pretty well. And it seemed to me that, man, these RSPs are going to cost me a lot of money in taxes at the end of the day. Because I'm not sure if everyone realizes, but if you have money in an RSP and you pull it out, it's full on income. It's just like a job. It's the same kind of, it's categorized as income, the same as my income from Bell Canada when I used to work there. Unlike if you had money in an investment account, a non-registered account, and you create dividend income or capital gains income, you know, capital gains is great in the sense that you only get taxed on half of that income and you don't get taxed at all until you sell it. So you get to defer taxes. There's a lot of benefits to doing that. But I couldn't do that with the money that was stuck in my RSPs, and that was a reality for me. And so I began to look around as to how, I didn't know what to do, but I began to look around, and my accountant put me in touch with this organization that, they have this product called TFSA Maximizer. And basically what it allows you to do over the course of about 10 years. The program takes about 10 years. I think it depends on your specifics in terms of your investments and so on. But basically, in a nutshell, it allows you to move your investments from your RSP to a TFSA on a tax free basis. Essentially, that's what it allows you to do. And that was pretty attractive. I can get into the details if you want me to get into them, but that's what I did.
And what's the idea behind it? Like, so you must be like you have money from your RSPs and you want to move it into your TFSA because the TFSA, when you're pulling funds out, you're not taxed on it.
Yes.
Right? And that's the key, right?
That's the key. It's a pretty detailed structure. I can run through how it works. It might be difficult to follow because it's pretty complicated. I don't know if you could do it yourself. I didn't do it myself. I had this advisor. I don't really know the right title for this guy who helped me with it, or this organization that helped me with it. But they set it up for you, and they manage it through the course of its 10-year life. But basically, okay, you want me to walk through how it works, Quentin?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. So I have to kind of look at my notes because it is fairly complicated. So I'm probably going to be looking at my other screen just to remind myself how it works. So basically, you have an RSP, and you convert it to a RIF, so registered income fund, so like a pension sort of thing.
Right.
So you don't have an RSP, you convert it to a RIF, and that's you can do that at any time. So that's step one, and then you take all the money that's in my RIF and all the money that I had in my various TFSAs at that time. And through this investment company I'm working with, I invested in these special purpose mortgage investment corporations. So MIX, if you've heard that term.
Yeah.
You invested in these MIX, and there's basically two categories of mix, one that pays about 3% and one that pays about 15%. I'll tell you why that matters in a minute, but just remember that there's these two categories of mix. Okay, so independent of all that, you have to have equity in a property. I use my principal residence, but you could use, I believe, any property, and you have to take a mortgage out against this property. And the mortgage is taken out. The lender is the same company that runs these mortgage investment corporation, these MICs. So I took a property, I took a mortgage out against my principal residence. And with the proceeds of that mortgage, I invested it in a non-registered investment account. In fact, I invested it through TD Waterhouse. That's where it sits right now. Mm-hmm. And I can invest that. So that money that I pulled out as mortgage on my principal residence, put into TD Waterhouse, I can buy stocks or bonds or ETFs, or I can buy options with it. Anything. There's no restrictions really at all on it. Just as there would be with any non-registered account. You know, contrast that with if your money was in your RSP. There's quite a bit of restrictions on what you can do with that money. You know, one thing interesting for perhaps some people on this call and something I've started to do more recently is invest in options. And, you know, for instance, you can't write put options inside of RSP, which is restrictive.
Yeah.
But you can in this kind of format.
You can't do spreads. You can't do any of that.
You can't do those kind of things.
But when you took the funds out of your principal residence, was it equivalent to the amount that was in the RRSPs?
Yeah. Yeah. So these things are independent, but there's a lot of coordination going on. Because I think it needs to be independent because it has to be kosher with the CRA.
Okay.
So they are independent, but there's a coordination going on to make sure everything. I'll tell you in a minute how it works, but X has to pay Y, and you need to make sure that you're making this work so that I'm not actually having to be out of pocket.
But, right.
Okay. So I had this mortgage invested in through my TD Waterhouse account. And okay, so that happens. Just let me look at my cheat sheet again. Just give me a second.
No problem.
It is pretty complicated.
So you had the equity from your property. You use the equity and put it into the TD Waterhouse account.
Okay. Yeah. So now I have these MICs, these mortgage investment corporations that are paying me money every month back into the RSP, back into the RIF, and back into the TFSA. So there's money being pushed into the RIFs and the TFSAs every month. But every month I have a mortgage payment to make because I borrowed this money to invest in my TD Waterhouse account. So every month there's a mortgage payment to make, but I don't want to pay this out of pocket. So what happens is out of my RIF every month, I pull out the equivalent amount of my mortgage payment. Okay. So I pull out of my RIF, just say my mortgage payment's $1,000. I pull it on my RIF, $1,000. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that goes through a bank account I set up for this purpose, and it flows into this mortgage payment. Okay. So it doesn't cost me money every month. And there's an interesting dynamic because the mortgage payments I make to invest in this TD Waterhouse account is tax deductible. That's tax deductible interest.
Right. Yep.
But the RIFs, when I extract money from my RIFs, that's taxable.
Yeah.
Okay. So the two, because of the same amount, they become a wash. They cancel each other out.
Right.
So in that sense, there's no incremental taxes I'm paying on a month-to-month or a year-to-year basis.
Okay.
Okay. But if you think of this is a kind of a loop. It just keeps happening every month. These mortgage payments happen. This extraction from the RIF happens. These payments are made into the RIF and into the TFSA. And here's when I'll tell you the details about the 3% and the 15%. So the RSP, there's two categories of RIFs that I take out, and there's actually two categories of mortgages that I take out. There's a first and there's a second mortgage. And I borrow money through this company. But anyway, I borrowed a first mortgage and that pays 3%, and a second mortgage and I have to pay 15% on that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they try and maximize the amount that you're paying in the second mortgage. They try and keep it as high as possible, the maximum that the CRA will really allow within what they deem to be reasonable, because the 15% is going to be paid into my TFSA. So my TFSA is making 15%. And so that's going to build up my TFSA pretty quickly. But the RSP, the MIC that the RSP is invested in, is only making 3%. So, and I'm pulling money, the RIF, not the RSP. So I'm pulling money out of the RIF every month and it's only making 3%. So the dynamic is the RIF is going down in value every month. And the TFSA is going up in value every month through this sort of circular dynamic that happens. So, over time, the net effect is I'm moving money from my RS or my RIF to my TFSA gradually, month over month over month, in such a way that after about 10 years, there'll be no money left in the RIF, and all that money will be in the RSP, all that money will be in the TFSA, and then and that's kind of the end of it. And then I'll still owe money on this mortgage because that mortgage hasn't been paid out. I just keep up with the interest payments. So at the end of the day, I'll have to take money out of the TFSA, which will be worth, assuming I do reasonably well in the TFSA and invest it properly, be worth an awful lot more than the mortgage. I take it out of the TFSA on a tax-free basis, pay off my mortgage, and then that's the end of it. I've got all my money on my RSP. It's all in my TFSA. It was done on a tax-free basis, and that's the end of it.
That's great. I think however you want to approach it. What I find is that a lot of people who are wealthy think in non-linear manners. And I think this is an example of a non-linear way of thinking. But what you're doing is you're using professionals to help you to do it, right?
Yes.
And I think that's the key. One of the things
really complicated. It's a lot to keep track of every month. And there's not a lot of room for error because a CRA they'll jump on me if I make a mistake. So I have a company that manages it for me. They charge, I believe the management fee is about 1.5% of the net assets on an annual basis. I think for new investors, I think I might have heard it as maybe 2%. But so there's a cost to it. But in the end of the day, I'm going to be much further ahead.
Yeah, and I think the idea here is the concept behind it. And you know what, if you know, at an event, if a member wants to come up to you and ask you, talk to you about it, is that okay?
Absolutely. I'm not sure on this recorded call. I don't know if I want to, you know, say who I'm using or you know.
No, that's okay.
But I'm happy to, if someone wants to reach out to me individually or talk to me in person or whatever, I'm happy to talk about it.
All right, that's cool. I think that's a great way of doing it because I know that, and I think that this is an interesting conversation, and these are the type of things I want to try to explore with these calls, and also let people know like we have a rich caliber of people who are part of the membership, and you know when people join, they don't really know who different people are, so it's an opportunity for me to talk to new members, but also talk to some experienced members, and you know, and it offers the ability to kind of connect in a different way with them and you know get to know them. So
you know, you've helped me a lot, Quentin, so anything I can do to help you or help other the people in this group, I'm honestly very happy to do it.
Thanks. Have a great afternoon, and thanks again.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with our member. I hope you got some valuable information out of it. If you would like to create wealth, freedom, and security through real estate investing, make sure to check out educationrei.ca. Until next time, I'm Quentin D'Souza. Get out there and take action. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for information purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to educationrei.ca.